This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 4th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
So the next matter on the agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party, A09-08. Whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. I'm Gary Hashey with the Audit Division. And good morning, Commissioners. This morning, the item before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum for the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Our audit had two findings. The first finding is divided into two parts. There was a misstatement of financial activity. The Minnesota DFL misstated receipts and disbursements for calendar years 2007 and 2008. The misstatements were mainly due to unreported transfers from the non-federal accounts to the payroll account and unreported non-federal salaries and taxes paid from the payroll account. In response to the interim audit report recommendation, the Minnesota DFL amended its reports to correctly correct the misstatements, except for the reporting of the payroll account transactions for non-federal employees. The audit staff recommends that the Commission find that the Minnesota DFL misstated 2007-2008 activity and failed to report non-federal salaries and taxes paid from their payroll account. The second part of the misstatement finding included in the misstatement above, the Minnesota DFL received an in-kind contribution from an unknown source that was not reported nor disgorged to the U.S. Treasury when the permissibility of the funds could not be confirmed. The audit staff recommends that the Commission find that the Minnesota DFL misstated activity in 2008 and failed to report an in-kind contribution in the amount of $10,000. Since the source and permissibility of the contribution remains in question, the audit staff further recommends that the Commission request that the Minnesota DFL disgorge $10,000 to the U.S. Treasury. Our second finding was an overfunding of federal accounts by the non-federal accounts. During the audit fieldwork, the analysis of the Minnesota DFL's transfers from its non-federal accounts indicated that the Minnesota DFL may have overfunded its federal accounts. In response to the interim audit report recommendation, the Minnesota DFL submitted additional documentation in conjunction with its amended reports, which showed that the committee did not overfund its federal account. The audit staff recommends that the Commission find that the Minnesota DFL has demonstrated that its non-federal accounts did not overfund its federal accounts. We're happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Commissioner McGann.
All right, two issues. Let's have a couple questions about the $10,000 issue, we'll call it the refund. Am I right to say the committee they're not sure where the money came from either. And they give, I mean, you've already given context, but they had an event at the convention, the hotel credit them supposedly back 10 grand on a bill, as I understand it. And after going through the audit process, no one's really sure where the 10 grand
That's correct.
Came from. They thought maybe it was a credit from somebody else who maybe had an event at the same hotel. And I'm sympathetic to not blaming a committee for the mistakes of hotel bills, because this happens, particularly happens around conventions. Those who have been to conventions, most of us have. Commissioners tend to go precisely to observe the chaos that ensues, and I can see this is certainly something that can happen. The question is now, what do you do about it? What's the committee's view on what to do with this $10,000?
The committee doesn't see it as an in-kind contribution. They're not quite sure. They thought it might be a refund for some event that was canceled. But at this point, when we were during our field work, this particular bill from the hotel was part of our disbursement sample. And when it was viewed, it was noted that there was a $10,000 credit given to the Minnesota DFL. Initially, we thought it might have been a prohibited contribution because the copy of the check that was included with the invoice was from another hotel, it was from the managing partner of another hotel, and there was no other information available. So initially, we thought it might have been a prohibited contribution. As we went through the audit process and other documents were made available, the other hotel indicated that they had received this check in error, and so they were transferring the funds to the hotel where the Minnesota DFL was having their events, and it got applied to their account. We did some research, and we did note that another committee had made a $10,000 payment at the same time to the other hotel, and I guess we offered that up as a possibility that, well, maybe it was from that committee and it was supposed to go in support of some event that the DFL is having at their hotel. The committee really wasn't sure. They couldn't get an answer from the other committee as to if was this it or was it not it. So, and unfortunately, we arrived at the situation where we have a $10,000 benefit to the DFL that was not reported, and it's unknown, so that's why we recommend a disgorgement to the U.S. Treasury for that amount.
And unfortunately for the committee, they're at the mercy of the hotel, this other committee, and everyone else, and they don't know the answer either. So it's 10 grand of anonymous, who knows where it came from, money. We sort of know where it came from. It came from the credit on the hotel, but tracing
Correct.
It back, they weren't entitled to this credit, right? Do they agree with that? It wasn't as if that you know, 30 grand room block, and they only spent 20 grand, so they're owed 10 grand by the hotel. They're not making that.
No, they're not. I don't think they're claiming that, you know, that it was a mistake, or that they're not entitled to the credit, or that it was really something else. The events that the DFL had at that hotel, there's, you know, we had invoices for those that covered the entire amount, and this credit was applied to that amount. So services were provided to the committee.
So they just made 10 grand on the deal.
You could look at it that way.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the hotel in question no longer exists. It was torn down sometime after the convention. So I think that leads to part of the problem with, with finding out exactly where or who provided the original $10,000 and why it was transferred to this other hotel.
That's a tough spot to be in for a committee. Um, didn't realize the hotel had been torn down. All right, well, moving on. The payroll account. We had a prior audit where a state party was doing something that seemed similar, where they had a what I thought of as a holding account. Some call it escrow. We do whatever terminology we want to use, where they use it for payroll purposes, and it seemed fine for the other committee. Now, this committee has a little bit different situation, as I understand it. They're sort of doing the same thing. The way I read the file, though, is they're really not doing payroll on a split. They're paying people either 100% federal or 100% non-federal.
That's correct.
Right. So it's not a question of this is an allocation account, because it's not. They're doing – so it's, to me, this case is easier. Where it gets trickier is the claim that they didn't actually have the right amount of money to pay who they needed to pay in the account, and one side may have subsidized the other impermissibly. I think that's what the issue is. But then the report gets a little murky. Maybe it's the cover. No, here's the report gets a little murky. Look at page 2 of, actually, this is the cover memo. Where they say, well, when you look at the, when you actually look back to the underlying accounts, the overpayment of the non-federal federal payment was off, which was potentially finding two, but they established that they didn't overfund. They seem to be saying, take a look at that. That means we didn't overfund this. And then page 2, you invoke the global perspective. So I'm not sure what we're doing here. It seems to be that the way I can read the file, that what they did adds up and is okay. You're reading the file to say that there's an issue, and I'm trying to just define so we all understand.
And in the overall concept of transfers from the non-federal to the federal account to pay for non-federal, their share of non-federal activity, in the end, taking everything into consideration, we found that they demonstrated that they did not overfund all non-federal transactions. But that's broken down. If you look strictly at allocable activity, they underfunded the allocable activity by over 100,000, but they overfunded the payroll, which is separate from the H-4 activity, and that was overfunded by over $100,000. So there's I guess that's where the balance takes place if you look at it in an overall situation.
But to get there, you seem to be saying we have to treat this as a pseudo allocation account.
As an auditor, I look at payroll as, you know, in a global perspective. In other words, one pay period, the committee's payroll is made up of federal and non-federal individuals. Now, in this particular case, the DFL, for administrative reasons, decided that they would treat their employees as either 100% federal or 100% non-federal. And what they did was that if any employee worked any time during that pay period on federal activity, they were paid with 100%. Well, they were to be paid with 100% federal funds. If they did no federal activity, then they were treated as a non-federal employee. And so looking at it that particular way, then the entire payroll for that pay period is being allocated between federal activity and non-federal activity. Not looking at individual persons per se, but the actual payroll of the committee. So, and since federal monies were transferred into the non-federal account and federal funds are transferred into the payroll account and non-federal funds are transferred into the payroll account to make these payments, as an auditor, I see that as allocation.
Okay, I hear you. The concern I have is I thought we already crossed that bridge in the, was it the Georgia Dem audit? The fight there was whether this sort of thing was an allocation account or not. It seems like we're still trying to say it is. I think we've crossed that bridge. I understand what you're saying, where you're coming at it from an audit perspective, but as a legal perspective, I don't see this as an allocation account. And if the legal predicate is different than the one it's. I mean, I'm not blaming you. I see what you're doing. I'm just coming at it from a different point of view.
Well, my interpretation of the regulations, a committee can have. Outlines the types of accounts that a committee can have. They can have federal accounts, allocation accounts, 11 accounts.
We're all familiar with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got it.
But
I've heard of it.
So, and again, as an auditor, a payroll account is an operating account. And
right,
it makes it difficult, even on the committee, to try and distinguish between the disbursements that are being made and to correctly report them and ensure that there's no overfunding issue and so on and so forth. So,
I would also offer in the Georgia case, I believe the one distinction was that those accounts were set up as separate accounts. It was more of an escrow account that was held by ADP or a payroll processing company, where in this case, I believe the account was within the payroll was handled exclusively by the committee. So I don't know if that draws
any
distinction.
But I mean, so really what you're saying is I think we've already decided this in the Georgia audit, but you're saying maybe you don't think we did because this is distinguishable than Georgia. But well, if I said that this is like Georgia, just as from your perspective isn't wrong if you start from the premise you're starting from, right? But if I start from the premise I'm starting, I mean, I'm not wrong either by saying this. I could say this looks like the Georgia thing and move on, right? I mean, it's a question of perspective.
Right.
It's not that anyone's metaphysically correct or wrong. It seems like you guys want to keep saying this stuff's allocation, and maybe at a certain point it is, but I'm kind of buying this payroll idea. That it looks like the Georgia thing.
Right. I mean, I would just also offer that I think Georgia has changed the way that they handle their account structure now to have payroll, at least federal payroll as a federal operating account. And Minnesota's as well.
Right. The DFL has also changed their administrative procedures. They now have a federal payroll account and a non-federal payroll account.
Yeah, I recall that with Georgia. That came up. And I think maybe some commissioners thought that was important to varying degrees or not important to other degrees, and that's still, to me, sizzle, not the steak. I mean, it seems to me this seems to be a variant of what the Georgia folks were doing, and it seems to me this is okay because of, you know, the way they're doing payroll. Now, just because they changed, they were doing it differently years ago, that doesn't make it illegal. Maybe from an auditing perspective, that raises the antenna, and I certainly understand that. But as a legal perspective, you know, you can do it a lot of ways. You know, the Danny Lee McDonald phrase, "Paint it round, paint it flat," doesn't make it
right.
Wrong. If it's just a choice, and they chose to do their payroll this way, and I don't see a violation of the underlying legal norm.
Also, you did some research, didn't you, on how the committee has reported this account in the past? That may be
the continuance from the September 20th meeting allowed me to do a little bit more research and spend some time down with the microfish downstairs. And basically, what we found was that back in the 92 election cycle, there was a team of auditors that were out there auditing the 1990 or 88 and 1990 election cycle, and during the course of their field work, they had some discussions with the committee, and the committee amended their 91 reports to include the payroll account as a federal account and report all the transactions based on discussions that they had apparently with the audit staff that was out there at the time. and they continued to do this for some time. Now, as time went on, I did not note any 100% non-federal payroll being reported, but they appeared to switch to allocating on Schedule H-4 all the payroll. And then by around the time when BCRA came into effect and the 25% rule took place, it appeared the committee stopped reporting any salary on Schedule H-4 as allocated and reported just the 100% federal. So to our best estimate, this is when they quite possibly may have came up with the decision to either treat their employees as 100% federal or 100% non-federal.
That's helpful. I feel bad you had to go through the microfiche, but that's how we still keep a lot of the sacred scrolls here. It's quite a treat. But I appreciate you doing that. We've had issues in the past where committees have been audited years ago, and it's gotten lost in the microfiche. And that's it's. So I want to thank you for doing all that. But you did in the presenting the narrative really hit the issue. I mean, what they were doing in 92 to me doesn't really matter much, because when McCain-Feingold came in, it completely changed how parties had to fund their activities and pay their employees. It used to be a pretty simple overhead ratio, and now it's much more complicated and cumbersome. And it's not surprising that they decided to go 100% federal or 100% non-federal. If the state party were to pay its employee, its 100% non-federal employee, and assume for the sake of argument that we all agree that what they're doing is 100% non-federal, they could pay that directly out of their non-federal account. Correct?
Correct.
Right. So what you're really saying is, because they're running it through this, whatever we want to call it, I'll call it a payroll account, you want to call it a sort of an analogous allocation account, that now that should have to then show up on the reports? Is that the issue?
Well, as treating it as an allocation account, a federal allocation account, it would have to be reported. Now, the question would be, you know, where would it be reported? On Schedule H-4, the non-federal portion gets eliminated to come up with their total correct federal activity, federal disbursements. In this particular case, it could be possible that they could report the entire payroll in its entirety as, let's say, 45% was federal payroll, and get that total amount. 55% was non-federal payroll, and then with memo entries indicate the payments to the individuals, and they would show up either on the federal side or the non-federal side. Or the transactions could be reported on line 29. I mean the non-federal on line 29 and the federal on 21B or 30B, depending on, you know, if there's FEA activity involved.
Assuming you're right that this is an allocation account, all that makes a lot of sense, and I don't really have any reason to disagree with all that. But I think the predicate question is, what is this account? And we crossed that bridge in the Georgia audit. I mean, we can keep trying to say these things are allocation accounts, but to me, this case is easier because they're not actually really allocating; they're paying 100% Fed or 100% non-Fed. Not even doing a split. I mean, there's no. Well, that I'll yield.
Madam Vice Chair,
thank you, Madam Chair. I also had some concerns about the about this payroll account, and I was a little confused about the way the. The memo is worded when you say they on page 2, the MNDFL did not overfund the non-federal share of overall expenses but there were insufficient federal funds in the payroll account to pay for the total reported federal expenditures, resulting in an overfunding of the federal share of salaries and taxes by the non-federal accounts. And I think that's a little bit confusing. You know, you read that. When I first read that, I thought, it's not overfunding, but it is overfunding. I'm a little confused here. And I think there was a reference earlier to the non-federal account, but I take it, correct me if I'm wrong, there wasn't one non-federal account. We're talking about a number of different accounts.
Correct. Yes, there are several non-federal accounts.
And this payroll account is a separate account? Yes, no, maybe?
As an auditor, I find the payroll account to be an operating account. I guess the title of it is payroll, but, I mean, there are other federal accounts. They had a DFL federal checking account. They had a DFL. They had federal accounts for contributions. And so
I'm just focusing on the payroll. This is an account?
It is a account. It is one single account. It's the same account that they had back in 1992. In fact, the account number is still the same. But
it's an account that received transfers from federal accounts as well as non-federal accounts.
Okay. So they're paying all the payroll out of this one account. Money's going in from both federal and non-federal sources. And as I understand what you're saying here, at some point or at some points, there wasn't enough federal. So the non-federal was subsidizing the federal. The non-federal was subsidizing the federal payroll, correct?
Correct.
Out of that, looking exclusively at that account.
Right.
Yes.
Right. But that's,
right.
It's an account.
Right.
And that was not the case, as I recall, in the Georgia audit.
Correct.
Okay. Because it's very similar to the issue that we considered in Georgia. I would disagree with my colleague to the extent that he views that as having settled the issue. There were certainly three commissioners who were ready to establish a rule of law based on the Georgia audit that these kinds of payroll accounts cannot be considered allocation accounts, but there weren't four commissioners of that view. My own personal view is that there were equitable considerations in that case that warranted not making the finding, one being that they were kind of jammed by their vendor, which is also not the case here. And in that case, there truly seemed to be a no harm, no foul, because there was no subsidy of any kind of federal expenditures, payroll or otherwise, by the non-federal sources. Correct? Correct me if I'm wrong, because this stuff is complicated.
Correct.
Yes.
So I think this case is actually different. And I think that where there is this issue of subsidization, there is more of a need for more reporting so that we can track that sort of thing. So I think, I thought about this a lot. I appreciate your research. Appreciate the microfiche work. You're going to need a new prescription on your eyeglasses after that. But I think that this is actually not quite the same as the Georgia audit on that issue. On the hotel bill, the fact that the hotel got burned down is really just sort of adds local color to the whole thing. How long after they were there and they got billed did the hotel burn down?
Was torn down.
Torn down. Okay.
It was about 2 years after the convention.
If they saw something in their bill that looked wrong, they did have some amount of time before the building got torn down when they could have perhaps tried to inquire. How they unpack it now, I agree, makes their life a little bit more complicated. But it seems to me that they were at least on notice that they got something of value from somebody. This $10,000 credit on their bill didn't, you know, come from nowhere. And I don't think you can just say, well, you know, maybe some individuals might do that if they got a credit, if their bill came out lower than they were expecting, they might say, ooh, I lucked out on that and walk away. Personally, I would go back and try and correct the billings with the hotel, but just, you know, want to establish that. But, you know, I don't think political committees have that same flexibility where they might decide, you know, gee, do I want to just kind of take the money and run, except this my hotel bill was lower than it was supposed to be, and just kind of go off with it. I think they actually do have a duty of inquiry at that point. So I think this is a very complicated audit, and I don't envy you for having to parse through all of this, but I think ultimately I agree with the recommendations.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also going to support the recommendations. I do have quite a bit of sympathy for the hotel bill issue, because getting an answer from a hotel can be a challenge. But this is not the $8 package of Oreos. This is a third of their total catering bill, in the tune of $10,000, and they need to be able to explain what it is, and if they can't, I think they're sort of stuck, and they're not like an individual person or maybe just a regular corporation. This is a committee that needs to be able to show that their money is permissible within the scope of federal law. So although I'm sympathetic, and it's in some of this information may not be in their control when you go to check out and your bill goes from $19,000 to $9,000, you probably should have asked some questions at that point to make sure that this was a permissible credit on your account for whatever the transaction might have been. And without that, I don't know that there's much that we can do about it. So I'll support a motion to approve this report or this recommendation memo.
Thank you. Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also agree that the Georgia FEC audit, I think that this is it is applicable to the audit we have before us. I mean, there we did have the concern from the vendor, apparent inability to process payroll from separate accounts. But here there's an administrative convenience factor as well. But similar to the Georgia FEC issue, at least what was persuasive to me was the concern about avoiding public confusion and distorting or creating a distorted impression about the extent to which, in that case, the Georgia Democratic Party was engaging in federal activity when you took all sorts of monies that were clearly had nothing to do with federal elections or the payment of employees who were involved in federal elections. That would create and really do a disservice to public understanding about what the nature of their federal involvement was. Same thing here, especially when they've kind of adopted a rule that you touch federal activity in any way, shape, or form, you're going to be paid out of the federal account, and only those who are not tainted, for lack of a better word, by involvement in federal activities, would you then be paid out of the non-federal account? So if we were to lump all of this and call it all a federal account, I think it would create on the public record a distorted view of exactly the extent to which the Minnesota Party was actually involved in federal election activities. I'm still kind of hung up on a point that the vice chair brought up, which is on page 2, kind of the overfunding or, well, not overfunding issue. If you're looking at this, and this is maybe putting you on the spot, and maybe this is a little bit of a difficult thing for you to do on the fly, if you're looking at this from my perspective, that this is not an allocation account and there's not a problem with using it as a payroll account for administrative purposes, was there in fact a subsidization of federal payroll by the non-federal account when they were shifting monies? Were they shifting more non-federal into this payroll account than was justified by how they were paying their employees?
That's correct. They did. They overfunded from the non-federal account, which in effect subsidized the federal payroll.
And that's going on the assumption that they were paying each, you know, that they had all their employees in neat boxes, one 100% non-federal and one 100% federal, there still was some subsidization that did take place?
That's correct.
And to what extent was that?
Approximately $120,000.
$120,000. Okay. And maybe it's here in this report. Where's that number listed in the report?
Get my report out.
That would be listed on page 15. Actually, I'm incorrect. That was $102,000. Okay, the $120,000 was the underfunding of shared activity reported on Schedule H-4.
Okay. And just how did the just if you, to the extent you know when presented with this, that even under the Minnesota Party's own analysis of how they were using this account and that it shouldn't be considered a federal account but a payroll account, there still was a problem with oversubsidization to the extent of $102,000. What was their reply? Did they contend against that, or did they agree
That?
And just
they agreed that there was an overfunding.
Okay. So they agreed that there was an overfunding, but they just say, but this is a little bit of a different legal analysis.
But when taken overall with all the non-federal accounts and all the federal accounts and transfers and for shared activity and so on, that, you know, the net effect was that there was no overfunding.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner McGinn.
So if you look at it overall, for the period covered by the audit, and you add in everything they didn't. You can make it add up that they didn't overfund. That's their argument. But if you look at individual pay periods, they did. And what I mean by that is a simple hypothetical. You have a federal employee, a non-federal employee. They each get paid $100. And the federal account moves $100. Non-federal account moves $100. No problem there, in my view. If the non-federal account moves $150 and the federal account moves $50 and they pay each $100, you have $50 of non-federal paying the federal share.
Correct.
Right? That's what happened. That's a oversimplified version of what they did here.
As to the timing of the overfunding, you know, I couldn't give you a specific time without going back and, you know, reviewing records and so on. So. But for the entire election cycle, there was an overfunding.
Do you have a sense, was it consistent throughout the cycle that they were off most pay periods, or was it a handful? Or you may not know, because I'm getting into the details here, and I thought the issue was a bigger question of law, but factually, the vice chair did kind of put it in the light that, and then Commissioner Peterson brought it home, that we all agree the report, the memo is confusing. It's just the deep, trying to make sure we all agree on what the issue is.
I have a worksheet here where I went through it and looking at the payroll account. Now, bear in mind the timing issues as to were they pre-funding their payroll, or did they have an existing balance that they were carrying forward into the next payroll and funding it after they made the payments, all of that taken into effect makes it does have some effect. I'll just take one. Well, let's see. In the I'll take July of 2007. They transferred approximately $58,000 from their federal account and $26,000 from their non-federal account. The salaries were $29,000 federal, $21,000 non-federal, taxes were 15,000 federal, 9,000 non-federal, and there was a small amount of money paid to their retirement vendor. And they were left, the ending balance in the account was now 46,000, and they had started with just 400. That was the way that I did my analysis. It was on the actuality of the checks clearing, you know, the payroll checks clearing through the bank account, and as we ran through. So that's where so based on the total payroll, federal and non-federal taxes and other, you know, disbursements, this is where I came up with the overfunding.
Okay. On the entry you talked about there, I didn't write down the numbers as you were going. Could you give us the rough? The rough delta, the difference on what the overfunding was there, because
I can't, without having a calculator in front of me, I can't say that they overfunded in that particular month. I just was looking at one month. I was just trying to show you how I went about what my procedure was when I was determining what the payroll was and what the funding issues were.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a follow-up question on this issue, just to make sure I completely understand. So there was an overfunding of the non-federal payroll. It seems like a subsidization issue would arise if there was a corresponding underfunding on the federal payroll side. I mean, if there wasn't an underfunding on federal payroll but an overfunding of non-federal payroll, then I'm not sure that there would necessarily be a subsidization problem. There would just be an extra 102,000.
Well, there was an underfunding on the federal side.
And yes. And to what extent was it underfunded on the federal side?
It was approximately 110,000.
110,000. Yeah. Okay. So those are not exactly the same, but they're pretty they balance each other out.
Pretty much balance each other out.
Okay.
Now the committee did make a statement in their response to the DFAR, and there wasn't an ending balance on December 31st, 2008 in the account. And of that balance, there was a $116,000 balance in the account. And $101,000 of that balance was federal dollars. Only $15,000 came from the non-federal account.
Okay.
Now, I used those amounts when I was determining the over and underfunding. So the over and underfunding amounts are still the same because it includes that $100,000 that was transferred in from the federal accounts. And if you recall, after the 2008 election, there was a recount going on in Minnesota. So most of the federal monies was for the recount, and they had a fairly large staff of employees that were hired specifically for during the recount.
Okay. And just one further point of clarification. The fourth number in the column on page 15, reported federal activity paid from non-federal accounts. That 8,000, that's not the difference between the 110 we're talking about
No.
the underfunding. Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
No, that was separate activity paid out of the non-federal that they agreed did have a federal component to it.
Okay.
And this was the federal share of that.
Okay, but for our purposes, we have an overfunding of 102 and an under on the non-federal side, and an underfunding on the federal payroll side of 110, which roughly balance each other out and result in some subsidization. Okay, thank you.
Just want to clarify one point. Finding one as written, though, still, if the commission were to approve that, it would mean this payroll account is a federal account.
Yes.
And in the Georgia audit, the conclusion of the commission was not that their payroll account was a federal account, right? We didn't.
My reading of on the Georgia account was that there was no decision made as to what type of account the payroll account was, only that the committee did not have to report the non-federal transactions.
And if it were a federal account, it would have to report the non-federal transactions, right? Because everything in the federal account would be reported.
Correct.
So if it's given the commission said they didn't have to report it, that means the commission's implicitly, the predicate to that is that it's not a federal account. But here we're saying this one is. So if you approve this audit report as is, particularly finding one, you are saying it's a federal account, which in my view is the opposite of what the commission said in Georgia. I think.
Mr. Calvert, do you have a comment on that?
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. In our legal comments, I want to try to tie some of this together and maybe go to the point that Commissioner McGann is trying to make. We went back and listened to the tape in Georgia, and we were unable to determine, because commissioners had multiple rationales for what they were doing, whether the commission was doing a rule of, was essentially making a rule of law, saying, no, you can do this sort of payroll account, and it's not a federal account. You don't have to ever report anything. Or whether what the commission was saying was, well, this particular committee, this Georgia committee, had, there was no overfunding. They were absolutely clean. So as an act of administrative discretion, not as a determination that this isn't a federal account or isn't the functional equivalent of an allocation account, but as a matter of no harm, no foul, we're not going to require this committee to report. And it wasn't a clean split because all of those rationales were important to a variety of commissioners. So the analysis we have in our comments on this audit basically boils down to this. If what the commission was saying in the Georgia audit is that this sort of an account is fine and it's it's not a federal account, you don't have to report the 100% non-federal part of it, then you're right, this is just like Georgia. But one of the things that we had pointed out in our comments in Georgia was that the reason for the rule that you got to report every penny in and every penny out, even all the non-federal, of accounts in which we allow you to mix the money is so that we can have a look and make sure that you're not engaging in any impermissible subsidization or overfunding. There wasn't any impermissible overfunding or subsidization in Georgia, so maybe that was an act of administrative discretion. And we were just pointing out that this case maybe more clearly delineates that choice of, there is some reason that we were advocating in Georgia that you've got to report even the 100% non-federal in a situation like this if the money is mixed. And depending on whether you put more emphasis on the net overfunding of this payroll account or the overall underfunding of the committee's total operations, then that may or may not make a difference to you as to where you come out ultimately on the relationship between this audit and the Georgia audit and whether that one was an ironclad rule of law or an exercise of administrative discretion.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not to endlessly belabor this point, I understand where my colleagues are coming from, but I just want to point out that in the Georgia case, while the original recommendation failed, the original recommendation from the auditors failed by a vote of 2-4, and I was within that 4. So that meant that 4 commissioners didn't go along with what was originally recommended. But then there were several subsequent motions. There was a motion to find that the payroll escrow account was not an allocation account, and that failed 3-3. There was a motion to these motions are so dense. there was a motion to find that the commission doesn't have jurisdiction to impose record-keeping and documentation requirements on employee activity that a state party claims is solely non-federal. And that also failed 3-3. So while the original recommendation didn't pass on a 4-2 vote or a 2-4 vote, the attempts to, you know, sort of declare what the rationale was and get a consensus on it, those didn't work either. Those failed. So I think that that's why council is left in this, well, we're not sure exactly what happened there, position. And as the person who was sort of the swing vote on that, as I said earlier, I think council's description of it as an act of administrative discretion based on the facts of that case, I think, is fairly accurate. And I think this case points out that there are circumstances in which that act of administrative discretion might not be appropriate because of this issue of the subsidy, which, you know, some people think there was a subsidy, some people think there wasn't, but, you know, some of us at least think that there was something that was that the public would have an interest in seeing disclosed. So that's sort of how we end up in this mushy place.
Thank you very much for the conversation and the information that you pulled. It was a very helpful conversation. But I think at this point it's probably best to hold this over to consider all the information and the discussion here at the table. Thank you very much.